Hello, my name is Father Larry Gillick. I am the director of the Degelman Center for Ignatian Spirituality here at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. We are going to be presenting a series on the parables of Jesus in the Gospels and the influence or the contribution of Aesop and his fables. Father Greg Carlson on the faculty here at Creighton University is joining me for this series, and he will explain now a little bit of what Aesop's fables are about.
Thanks, Larry. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I look forward to stimulating conversations as we meet Aesop and Jesus and Ignatius interacting with each other in us.
Yes, those are three different forms of literature, aren't they?
You bet.
One's the gospel narrative, in which Jesus used stories to, well, so people would remember them, isn't it?
Right.
The parables. And the Ignatius wrote the spiritual exercises so that people could face certain truths, especially the call of Jesus and his redemptive love. What about Aesop?
Yeah, Aesop is a shadowy figure from the 600s B.C. sometime, if he existed at all. And like many early figures in Greek literature, he's the kind of figure who gathers things. Maybe there was an Aesop, and he told 15 or 20 great stories in his lifetime. And after that, when people found a good story of this sort, they just naturally said, oh, this is one of Aesop's stories, and all it takes is one person to say that, and the next person has to believe that it's an Aesop story. Wow. So Aesop was not the creator of this genre of literature. It came from the Babylonians, actually, hundreds of years beforehand. But there is this kind of story that has a particular effect, at least as I experience fables, and that is to invite us to open our eyes to some reality in our life, to become aware, to perceive just what's going on. It's the kind of thing where a speaker, let's say in a sermon or in a court case or in conversation with another person, reaches to a story to try to let the other person catch just what's going on here.
We always talk about morals.
Right.
Why morals? Why not just an Aesop story that's a nice story? What was the nature of...
Great question. This is the kind of story that invites perception about how to live life. And so people will often offer their perception of what the story is leading to. Just as a joke may lead up to a punchline, a fable regularly leads to a moral. Now, the interesting thing for me is there are these stories. There are some 750 of them that are attributed to Aesop in the ancient world. But the fascinating thing for me about them is the different way in which different people respond to the same story. One of the best writers on fables recently will say that fables are inherently polyvalent.
Okay.
They have many possible meanings, and it's up to the listener, really, to find the sort of meaning that he is invited to by the particular story.
But so the story offers itself.
Right. Invites.
For personal interpretation, so that according to their own life or the way they look at life, story, that Aesop's fable, would help them according to what they're going through or they're dealing with or living, and another person has a different life, so they get something else out of it.
Exactly.
All right.
And so part of the fun with fables for me as a researcher on fables and a collector of fable editions is, in fact, to see the way, for example, in the 19th century, editors were trying to coach their readers, typically children, to find the lesson they wanted them to find in the fable. And often we would have to say, where is that in this fable? It's imposed by the sort of educational agenda of the storyteller, and it's not in the story at all.
Yeah, that's very good. And, you know, in the spiritual exercises, in number 2 of the annotations, Ignatius kind of says the same thing. He said the person directing the retreat should not give a strict, it should be orthodox, but not say, you've got to get this out of that. This is, in a sense, this is the moral, this is the point. It's got to be more adapted to how God is dealing more. He says it in number later on in the annotations. You got to let the Creator deal with the retreatant, and the retreatant more directly with God, not with the director. So he's saying, don't you give the interpretation? Don't you, in a sense, don't you give the moral or the point? Let them. It's much more important if they discover it themselves, because it's their work. It's their spirit.
So exactly.
The same thing with
exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same story in Aesop. One of the most helpful books, in the last 60 or 70 years on Aesop, was done by a fellow named Lloyd Daly. He worked under the great researcher on fables, Ben Edwin Perry, and where Perry had gathered the 753 Latin and Greek texts that are ascribed to Aesop, Lloyd Daly translated them into English. The title of his book is Aesop Without Morals.
Ah.
He wanted people to see what the stories were without letting the morals sort of interpret the story for them. So he banished the morals to an appendix. In fact, I watch eBay to see if there's new editions of Aesop that I haven't found yet that I can put in my collection.
Uh-huh.
And somebody just a year or two ago on eBay offered this sort of ad for Lloyd Daly's book, Aesop Without Morals. Uncensored Aesop, erotic stories, Aesop Without Morals.
Uh-huh.
The person obviously had not looked inside the book to know what the point of a moral was there.
This
was supposed to be an immoral Aesop. Well, Aesop is not immoral. He's a good storyteller.
Yeah.
This just happened to be texts without the morals there to interpret them for us. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly the parallel that you described.
Sure,
both Aesop and Ignatius are asking the person to get something for the person himself.
And maybe the gospel writers and next one of these days on the series, Father Dennis Hamm, who teaches theology here at Creighton University, is going to come and talk about parables. But maybe, as we know, the gospel writers collected some parables that Jesus told as a way of making a point. But the question will always be, is there one point that Jesus was making? And everyone has to have the same point, or is it, like Ignatius said, people should, chew their own food and profit from it according to what it means to them.
And Larry, my sense from some scriptural studies I have done is that there's a high likelihood that Jesus, in at least his earliest ministry, would simply offer great stories.
Yeah.
As a challenge to his hearers, and then would say something like, let the person who has ears hear.
Right.
So he might tell a story like the sower going out to sow the seed, and not attempt at all to give any explanation.
Yeah.
Merely to catch people, to catch their interest, if you want, to challenge them.
Yeah.
To invite them to find whatever the right next step was for them, whether they were, for example, seed that was falling by the wayside, or whether they were springing up too fast and didn't have any roots, or whether they couldn't find good soil in themselves. All those things are there, but I think it's highly likely, that interpretation makes sense to me, that at least some of the stories of the Gospels, the parables of Jesus, came from a phase of his own preaching where he was challenging and engaging listeners without defining for them whatever they might get from this.
And a couple of times the disciples would, after he tells it to the crowds, the parables to the crowds, they said, now tell us, how can we talk in parables and what does that mean? You know, they wanted him to give a strict interpretation, but to the crowds, he wanted them to come to the awareness that they had to do some of their own homework. They had to do their own struggling with what is he saying? Because at least for Jesus, and in the exercises, it's got to be a free response to the person of Jesus. That's what he's asking for, and for the kingdom. So it's how are you listening to this? Are you listening first, and are you interiorizing it?
And that's why, in my understanding, if you look at the three synoptic gospels dealing with that parable I just mentioned of the sower sowing the seed, each gospel will give a slightly different interpretation of what Jesus told his disciples the meaning was.
That's right. And that's probably the work of the author, moving the original story along a little bit in terms of what the readers of that gospel needed to hear.
And my sense is, if I were to draw the parallel with fables, in any good story, there's a wide range of meanings that well-intentioned, critical, sensitive readers or listeners will find. That doesn't mean that the story can mean anything you want it to mean.
Okay, very good.
There are some explanations that simply don't fit, and my experience is many of those that are printed up, especially for kids, do not fit.
Yeah.
They didn't come from this story. They come from the agenda of the editor or the educator.
Yeah.
And so it is with Jesus' stories. It's not that they are an invitation to think any way you want about this.
Right.
There is, and who knows where the limits of the range are within which this story is really finding its meaning.
Yeah.
And every generation, I think, will find new depths of meaning, new applications, new possibilities, both for the fables of Aesop and for
parables.
The meaning of the parables of Jesus.
Right. But the big thing is that each of us, we don't believe in private interpretation necessarily, but we have to see if we have ears to hear. Are we open to the word? And are we open to our own processing? That, to me, that's what parables and fables are about.
Sure. And for me, Larry, the difference, as I have examined them, is fables ask about perception. Do you see what's going on?
Right.
Parables tend to dig a little bit deeper and to say, what are your values? Where are you in this story?
Yes.
What kind of feelings are you operating from?
Right. You know, that's where, say, what you're saying is awareness is the object of fables. Gospel is, are you aware of the attitudes that the parables are forming in you?
Right. Values.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, attitudes.
And then for the gospel and for the exercise of St. Ignatius, it's now based on that attitude, that attitudinal shift, your actions flow from your attitudes. And it's ultimately the actions flowing from a Christian attitude that the parables are working towards, which is what Jesus calls the kingdom. Greg, you have, we should say, you have here at Creighton, in the library, a separate special room for your collection of fables. How many books do you have there?
So far I've cataloged 5,580 something. There's another 200 or 300 in my room waiting for a chance to get cataloged.
I've seen that room. how many, I mean, you'd have one story, one fable, and we're going to get to the fables now, but say one story, there could be a lot of different variations according to the country or the author who collected it and gives it a different spin. Or I noticed that some are written out in poetic form, in rhyming form,
yes,
and some are just a straight running narrative.
Right, and let me say, it tends to vary more by the individual and less by the culture. Other forms of literature vary more by culture. The fables tend to travel fairly intact from one culture to another, or less, by contrast with other literatures.
Yeah.
But yes, the whole thing that has driven this collecting madness of mine is the diversity of response to the simple stories of Aesop. Diverse tellings, people will tell the story differently, and not just more or less well, but they'll see different possibilities in even the smallest story.
Yeah.
Diverse interpretations, especially in the morals, and then diverse illustrations, since these are often illustrated books.
Why don't you share one of the fables, and maybe give a standard interpretation, and then I'll we might talk about that a little bit in terms of a similar parable that Jesus used. Is that all right?
That's fine. What I'm going to do is tell the story of the stag at the pool.
Okay.
As it happens, one day, a mature stag felt thirsty and needed a drink of water. and came to a pool that happened to be particularly placid and still. And as this big stag at the edge of the water leaned over to drink some water to lap it up, he was able to see his own image very clearly in the limpid waters of this pool. And what he saw there made him step back in his mind and say, "My, what beautiful antlers I have. They really are developing nicely. They're gorgeous, and they have more points than they did last year, and they spread out so beautifully." And just as he was feeling so happy and proud with this gorgeous rack of antlers that he had, his head looked down further as he was looking at the water, and he looked at his spindly legs and said, "Oh, but I'm so ashamed of these skinny, spindly legs. I wish I had legs worthy of the rack of antlers that I have." As he was musing to himself and then took a drink, he heard the sound of the dogs in the distance. Hunters were after him. And immediately, instinctively, he jumped and began to move away from the sound of the dogs. And though they were just coming into sight, the stag was able to outdistance the dogs. As he ran across meadows and fields, they were not gaining on him, they were losing ground on him. But these were particularly persistent dogs, and so they kept after him with the hunters behind, sounding their horns and gathering their fellow hunters. As I say, the stag continued to increase the distance between himself and the dogs as he went across open territory, and then he came to a woods, a forest. And he ducked inside and had to slow down. And not only did he slow down, but his antlers got caught in the branches, and he couldn't move anymore. And so the dogs came up and attacked him and killed him. In his dying moments, the stag could reflect, "My, what I thought was my strength only got me into trouble, and I underestimated what was really the most saving thing about me and the best thing about me, my powerful legs." And with that, he died.
That's a sad story.
It's a sad story. Fables are often sad. They're trying to open your eyes to some things that may be painful to see.
So the sadness is not just about the stag, it's about me.
It's about me. It's about me. And you ask about how is this fable usually moralized, and that's the word people use for giving a moral to the fable.
So a moral is like a little teaching.
Moral's the teaching. It sums up the what you can learn from this fable. Since a fable is a past tense story that invites perception about how we live, what's the perception that's invited here? It's that we often pride ourselves on what is not the best thing about us, or what only gets us into trouble, or what is only external, and we overlook gifts that we have that we think are really weaknesses, and that may be the most saving or best features about us.
So it's the old thing, our best gift could be our biggest cross.
Yes.
And that which we look upon as a diminishment or a frailty might be that which could save us, or does save us.
Yes.
There's and you would say there are many interpretations to that. That's your interpretation, but some other writer or somebody reading it at that time would say, it's how stupid of him to go into the woods at all.
Sure.
You know, but or maybe an interpretation about the dogs.
Yes.
All the elements of the fable are open to our coming not so much to be enamored or disappointed or sad about the characters, but what is in there about me to which I could wake up.
Right, and some people will emphasize, let's say, the externality of the antlers, that people who give importance to their appearance are only going to be disappointed eventually. Okay, yeah. You could go in that direction if you want.
So it's beauty or strength or some or anything that takes you out of balance.
Right.
I mean, Ignatius talks so much about order and disorder or harmony to keep everything in balance, appreciation of everything. There's a parable that Jesus tells in Luke 18. He told them this parable. This is verse 9. He told this parable to some who trusted in themselves. So parallel with the beauty of the rack of antlers.
You bet.
To some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. So the despising of the legs.
You bet.
Okay. This is the parable. Two men went up to the synagogue to pray. One, a Pharisee, and the other, a tax collector. Tax collectors being represented by unrighteous or sinful. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus. So this is where he would be looking at his antlers. God, I thank you that I am not like others. Extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. So the tax collector would be the spindly legs.
Exactly.
Okay. He says, I fast, I tithe weekly of all that I have. The tax collector, standing at a great distance, would not even lift his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Jesus said, I tell you, this man went back home justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts themselves will be exalted, but those who humble themselves will be exalted. So that's the parable. And Jesus saying, not only wake up, but change your attitude towards, you know, what is beautiful. You know, are you beautiful because of all your external righteous actions, or are you beautiful? And this is real central to Jesus' teaching. Are you beautiful because of how I look at you mercifully, how I have come to give you a new idea of yourself? So that's an interpretation of that parable. There could be others.
You bet. And Larry, you've rightly pointed out that parables challenge our attitudes, invite us to reconsider our attitudes
right.
In the light of Jesus' teaching of a loving God who has mercy on us.
Right.
There, I see three attitudes that I think that parable challenges in those of us who hear it. There are
okay.
probably many more we
sure.
could put out there.
Yeah.
One of them is comparative thinking. Is it the way for me to look at myself to sort of identify or establish myself by comparison with other people?
Okay, very good.
That's what that tax collector is
yeah.
doing mm-hmm. by comparing himself and saying, I'm glad I'm not like these other people.
Right.
A second thing I hear Jesus challenging in there has to do with, it goes back to the fable with, what makes you ashamed, or how do you deal with
okay.
the possibility of shame in your life?
Oh, very good.
And of negative feelings mm-hmm. about yourself.
Right.
There is a third thing that I hear, and that is a questioning about looking at yourself, about sort of trying to establish yourself
okay.
and your value.
Right.
And I'm sure for the Pharisee, that comes out of a good place in his soul.
Sure.
He wants to be good in the eyes of God.
Right.
And so he is ticking off the things he does that
are his beauty.
That are his beauty. That right. makes him something that in a sense he can sort of sell to God to get God's friendship,
right, or that he can live with peacefully too. He knows he's in the right ballpark, if you want.
Right, and doesn't have to be ashamed of that. He's proud of what he has been able to do to present himself this way to God.
Okay, then the question is, why doesn't Jesus reckon that as blessed? And that's the awareness thing. What is Jesus saying about external actions or righteous behavior? And apparently, he's challenging, does this man do them out of love or out of fear? I mean, that's one interpretation.
You bet.
And does he do it so that he feels good about himself, or that he makes sure that he's got all his tickets punched and has no need of Jesus as mercy? And I think that's the key of the parable, that Jesus is saying, you know, it goes back a lot of times to what I demand, what I want is mercy, not sacrifice. What I want is the interior realization that I love you, not for what you do, but who you are in my eyes. Then do those things that come from how you see yourself. You know, it's am I loved and so I do things, or do I do things and therefore God has to love me?
Larry, here's where I see Jesus so cutting a level deeper than Aesop.
Okay.
And much as I love Aesop, for me, as I try to pray with that parable, what I hear Jesus challenging, here's how I hear Jesus challenging the Pharisee in me. He's saying, do you really need God at all?
Yeah.
When you're praying this way?
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not like other people. Here's all that I do. And right. So I can stand up in church and feel happy with myself.
Right.
And I think Jesus is saying, this man has missed God. There is no communication with God. There's no dependence on God. There's no trust. There's no receiving the kingdom.
Right.
This man does not need God.
Yes. Or he needs God to be the approver.
Sure.
Not the lover.
Yeah.
So he said, now you can't touch me because I have protected myself by doing all these good things. But this no good tax collector, and the tax collector himself doesn't think very highly of himself. He can't even look up to heaven, and he's very ashamed of himself. He's very ashamed in the sense of his spindly legs that haven't done him any good at all.
He is all spindly legs. That's the tax collector.
That's right. And he's saying, and Jesus is saying, have this mind in you that I have in you, that you do stand in need of mercy, and I have mercy on you, and that will form a deeper relationship with me, which is what I want, rather than the relationship of execution, which is what the Pharisee is doing.
I think Jesus is saying of that poor tax collector who won't raise his head, this man is finding God.
Yeah. Or Jesus is finding him.
Or Jesus is finding him, and in Jesus this man can find God.
That's
and
right.
In this approach to God. When you've got your spindly legs, you have a chance. That's where Jesus is saying it's not just that this one is dangerous and that one is good. He's saying need is a great avenue towards God. Can you live with being needy?
That's right. That's very good. We just have a little more time. We have one more parable that you were sharing with me before, and I think it might be a nice way to close it and to help understand this issue and to be more familiar with other ways that Aesop has fables. I like this one very much.
This is a story of two men who went to the temple.
Same kind of thing.
Same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In this case, one man was greedy and the other was envious. So there's a greedy, covetous man. He wants to get stuff. There is an envious, jealous man who sees his stuff in terms of what other people have.
Okay.
Both went into the temple one day, this is in the ancient world with their gods, and prayed to the main god, Zeus. Zeus happened to be a little busy that day, and so he didn't have time to answer their prayers himself. So he said to one of the other gods, Apollo, would you go down and take care of this for me? I haven't got time to listen to these two fellows. Please, you go down and do it. Okay, so Apollo went, met the two men in the temple and said, I don't have a lot of time. I tell you what, whatever each of you wants, let's say this, one asks and the other is going and will get it, and the other asks and will get double. How's that for a quick and easy deal? So Apollo thought that was very generous. He didn't have to listen to all of their requests. Each man could ask. Whoever asked first would get what he wanted. Whoever asked second would get double what the first man asked for. And so,
would he get the same thing?
That's the idea. Okay. He'll get just the same thing, but double. So okay. He actually turned to the greedy man and said, so what do you want? The greedy man thought for a minute and said, I want to be polite. I'll defer to this other man, hoping, of course, that he would get more that way.
Sure.
The other man would ask, get what he wanted, and then the greedy man would get double.
Okay.
The envious man heard this, that the other was deferring to him. He also thought just a second, and then he turned to Apollo and said a very surprising thing. Pluck one of my eyes out. That's the end of the fable.
You're not going to. So that's just what it is.
That's what it is now.
Now we do some interior thinking.
What do you think was going on there?
Well, if he has one eye, then the other guy is going to have both his eyes plucked out.
Yeah.
And so the greedy man got twice.
What the envious man did.
And the envious man got one eye that he, through which he could see.
Right. And that to me is the sort of breathtaking perception in this fable, that envious people work so much by comparison with other folks,
mm-hmm.
that they will ask to be hurt, that they're happy to be hurt, if they can see other people being hurt more.
Even more, yeah.
It just blows my mind that someone can think that way, and I think we all do when we're envious. We're rating ourselves against others, and what do we have in terms of what they have? That kind of comparison is going on there. In this case, the envious man was upfront about it. Given the chance to ask for something, and knowing that the other would get double, he asked to lose one of his eyes so that he could watch the other man losing both of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember one time when I was younger, a little boy, and I was sick in bed, and I hoped that it was raining outside so the other kids couldn't play either.
There you go. That's it.
So was I envious or covetous or greedy? The question is, that's part of our humanity. I mean, it's part of the struggle. It's part of that balance. Of course, there's a comparison. There's envy. There's greed. That's all in us. And the beauty of Jesus in the parables, he really embraced that which was the tax collector. He really embraced that he was probably a tax collector who was envious and covetous and greedy.
Yes.
As well. But yes. Jesus embraced him. There doesn't seem to be any redemption or any hope in that fable, though.
No, it's meant to be a very rude eye-opening
to the reality of human beings.
To the reality of what, especially envy does.
Oh, what envy does?
It makes you vulnerable to hurting yourself just for the joy.
Yes.
Of outdoing other people.
Yes.
So it's one of those fables, you know, fables and parables in my mind are on a kind of a continuum. One moves towards the other.
Yeah.
And some fables do start to dig away at attitudes like that.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly just by saying, do you see it? Do you see what you're doing when you want another person to hurt just so that person's hurting more than you are? When you gauge yourself against another person.
And the Pharisee really was feeling good, because not only had he done all these things, but there is a someone against whom he is better than.
Exactly that.
And that makes him feel better. So It goes back to that thing we talk about, comparisinning, where you sin by comparing your beautiful antlers with other people's spindly legs.
Yeah, and I am somebody because I'm better than somebody else,
right.
Or I have more. I have something that they don't have.
Very good. Well, that's very helpful. It gives us something to pray about. In all the, I mean, it sounds like the fables are always going to point out some foible. I mean, they're almost Aesop's foibles, as well as Aesop's fables. They're talking about human frailty, and the beauty of the parables will always highlight the goodness of Jesus.
Yes.
And the mercy and the care and the embrace of what is difficult for human beings to embrace, that is, our humanity.
And one of the places I think where they meet, Larry, is at the sort of crossroads of honesty.
Okay.
Jesus is saying, come as you are, and
yeah.
you can find God that way. Stop defending or protecting yourself or
right.
building yourself up or looking in the mirror, trying to find the antlers that make you great,
yeah.
Or the comparison with other people that makes you one better
yes.
than they are. It's that sort of come as you are. And the fables, as you say, often negatively. So there are some that are more positive, and I hope we can get to them in the course of these conversations.
Yeah.
But often negatively, they're trying to open your eyes to what's really there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, one reason I believe in the gospel, I enjoy fables, but I believe in the gospel,
yes.
is the gospel gives an answer to this. What do I do when I see
right.
my own covetousness or my own greediness or my own envy?
Exactly. And in the parable today, we see the man went home, not only to his domicile, but to himself. He could live with himself more freely and more balanced because of the mercy and the embrace of Jesus. And that's where we live too.
And the fables can show us those places where we're weak
yeah.
and in need, where we have spindly legs,
yeah.
where we will tend to destroy ourselves
yeah.
and other people, and that's the place where we can find God.
So like a parable and like the fables, there is an aha moment where you say, yeah, I'm there.
That's it.
That's me. And so it's the awareness that precedes attitude.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Greg Carlson. You may write email to us at either lgillick@creighton.edu or gcarlson@creighton.edu, and we'd love to hear how these are helpful to you. God bless you.
Amen.